I'm your host, Benjamin Levesse, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 41st episode of Fiber Hooligan again. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. This show was unfortunately lost in the ethers of technology when we recorded it live, and I thought it was a pretty great show, and so our guest has been gracious enough to re-record and be re-interviewed again so that you fiber hooligans who couldn't listen live get a chance to hear her again. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Before we get to the show, I thought I'd give you all an update on the podcaster throwdown for Halos of Hope. In case you missed it on the Naughty Girls Knitcast about a month and a half ago, there is an additional way to earn hat points for your team. A $5 donation to your team equals one virtual hat point toward your team's final bragging rights for the throwdown. So for those of you who are just too busy to get a hat done for the throwdown, here's another way you can participate. And you can read more about this up on the halosofhope.org blog. The money raised through Halos of Hope website will be used to offset the shipping costs for the hats we're collecting in this campaign, as well as hats that we collect and send all over the country. So we now have actual hats and virtual hats to count in for the throwdown for each team. And let me give you the tallies so far. Team Knitmore Girls has 459 actual hats and 108 virtual hats for a total of 567 for that team. Team Naughty Girls has 198 actual hats and 76 virtual hats for a total of 274 for that team. Team Craftlit has 208 actual hats and 20 virtual hats for a total of 228 for that team. Team Sockaholic has 345 actual hats and 117, which is virtual hats, which is a big jump from them from last week, for a total of 462 for that team. Team Ready, Set, Knit has 138 actual hats and 8 virtual hats for a total of 146 for that team. Team Knit Knit Cafe has 76 actual hats and 22 virtual hats for a total of 98 for that team. And according to our friends at Pearlescence and Halos of Hope, we actually have 8 actual hats and 18 virtual hats donations for a total of 18 hats for no team. But so there are now 1,427 actual hats and 361 additional virtual hat points for the teams, which give us a grand total of 1,788. With the addition of the 361 virtual hats at $5 each, we've now raised an additional $1,805, which will ship 5,956 hats. So that's great. Really appreciate it. It all makes a difference. You have no idea. There are a lot of cool things going on, specials, prizes, discounts on hat patterns, just cool stuff associated with this throwdown as we wind down here. And so I'm going to invite you all to join us up on our Podcaster Throwdown Ravelry group so you don't miss anything. You can learn a lot more up there. I also want to encourage you to tune in to the Naughty Girls Knitcast in the next week or so because I understand that the prize pool may be growing. And if any of you wanted to donate prizes to the winning teams for the winning prize packages, I invite you to please contact Laura Wilson-Martos at dizzyblondstudios@gmail.com. And for all of those you who'd still like to get into the throwdown, again, you still have a little bit of time. I believe our cutoff for sending the hats is the 17th, but I'm sure that if you're coming to Stitches West, you could bring them along with you for your team of choice. And we'd sure appreciate the help. Every hat makes a difference, and we'd love your help to help us help Halos of Hope. And please keep listening to Fiber Hooligan. We have one more show before Stitches West, and I'll give you an update next week on that show. Okay. My guest today is both a very talented designer and an enthusiastic creative force. Though she's been crafting and sewing all her life, she did not get into knitting until mid-2006. After teaching herself, she could not stop thinking about knitting and began making up patterns almost immediately. In early 2008, she submitted a few designs for publications, and by late 2008, her designs appeared in Knitty, in Weave Knits, and in 101 Luxury One-Skein Wonders. There's a mouthful. Since then, she has designed for several yarn companies, and her work has also appeared in many other publications, including several books and magazines like Twist Collective and Knit Scene. Her designs generally have a modern and fresh sensibility with a fun and innovative twist. One of the things she really enjoys is the opportunity to share and exchange knowledge with other knitters and her students. She teaches at knitting shows, including Stitches, yarn shops, guilds, and is also presented at Blog Her Conference and Craftcation. I hope I did that right. She continues to develop her self-published designs under her independent design label, but she also operates a small boutique distributorship, Crafty Diversions, which represent highly talented knitting designers, and she distributes their patterns and products to yarn stores. She lives and is inspired by the many sights and sounds of Southern California. According to her, if it weren't for bouts of insomnia, she would never find the time to knit or use up her abundance of creative energy, or is that the other way around? Her patterns, tutorials, and blog can be found on her own website, www.annquoluquito.com. I'll be spelling that later. I'm speaking, of course, of the very talented and energetic Ann Quoluquito. Ann joins us again this evening from La Habra, California. Good evening, Ann, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good evening, Benjamin. Thanks for having me back.
Yes. Well, you now have the distinct honor of appearing in back-to-back episodes of a Fiber Hooligan podcast. And again, just to reiterate, what happened with our live program is that I had some technical difficulties, and one thing led to another, and we lost the interview. But Ann and I did a lot of prep. Yeah, it has never happened before, so I hope it never happens again, and I sure hope it doesn't happen to this show. This is one of those things where I really felt that we did a lot of prep for this, and your interview was so exceptional that we had to find time to re-record, and so we're recording not live, but in the evening, on Tuesday evening. And I really do appreciate your time coming back here and letting me ask you these questions again.
No problem. Thanks. And I hope it doesn't happen again to anyone else either. But, you know, sometimes technology, you know, is great, but there's sometimes things just, you've got to make lemons out of lemonade. I mean, lemonade out of lemons. Is that, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. No, but I do appreciate, and I appreciate what a good sport you are. So it's not the morning, and I know you're not a morning person. You're more of a night person. It's about 7:30 your time right now. So you're probably a little more on than you usually are in the morning, right?
Yeah, actually, I am. I'm a little, like I said before, people who know me, I'm a little too slow to start in the morning. No matter what time I wake up, I'm just a little slow to start, and just, you know, some people are morning persons, and I'm just a night owl, naturally. I've always been like that.
Me too.
My parents used to yell at me for staying up so late.
Do they?
Well, yeah, my dad still tells me. He's like, why don't you go to bed earlier? Why are you going to bed so late all the time? So it's tiring when he comes to visit, because he gets up really early. Yeah.
It's a parental thing, and I understand that too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's great. I should ask you, how was your day? It's been, a little over 36 hours since we've spoken. Anything new happening since we talked last time?
No, I'm just getting ready for Stitches and doing some other work on the side as well, but mostly trying to prepare for Stitches West.
Okay. Well, that's cool. All right. Well, then let's get right into the interview. No one who's in the industry actually starts in the industry, the fiber arts industry, I mean. So for our Fiber Hooligan listeners, let's go through your background. And let's start with, tell us a little bit about you and where you grew up.
Well, I grew up in the Southwest Houston area. Texas, for anybody who might be international. And if anyone knows the Houston area specifically, I mostly grew up in A-Leaf and then in Sugar Land.
Okay.
And then I moved out here after school. So.
And you were telling me earlier in the pre-interview about your folks, growing up with your folks, and that artistic and craftsy. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say both my father and mother have very creative artistic abilities, but they never really, pursued it. It wasn't something that they encouraged us to do, at least not me specifically, but it's just part of, I think, the Asian immigrant culture, you be a doctor or engineer or something and not an artist. Or something that's, is part of it. It's just, like your parent, a lot of people, parents, they just want their kids to succeed and they don't want them to, be the quote unquote starving artist type. So, yeah, I was really crafty and I learned how to sew from my dad. He actually taught me how to sew my first button at age 8. But other than that, they didn't really encourage me too much to pursue a lot of artistic and creative ventures. But I got there on my own anyway.
Well, we're glad you did. Where did you go to school, and what did you study?
I ended up at the University of Texas at Austin, and initially I set out to pursue forensic chemistry, but then I realized that I hated physics and calculus, very anti-Asian model minority. And so then I switched to anthropology, cultural anthropology specifically, and I minored in Asian studies and German.
Asian studies and German. That's a heck of a combination.
Well, the German was because at UT Austin, if you were enrolled in the College of Natural Sciences pursuing a Bachelor of Science, at that time they required you to, the foreign languages were limited to Russian, German, or French. But I studied Spanish in high school, so I picked what I thought was the more practical language, so German, and I already started, so it just kind of stuck. But if I had more choice and, start off trying to pursue a chemistry degree, I would have probably chosen Spanish and just continued with that and also maybe Chinese, just so I don't lose it.
It's funny, when I went to high school, this tells you a real disconnect, and I don't know why I took it. Well, I do know why I took it, and it's not been bad. It's just sometimes, sometimes I wish I had taken Spanish, but I took 2 years of Latin.
So you had your Latin Wednesday bit on Facebook, huh?
I did. It was, and I have to say, when I was to post those Latin Wednesday things, I had to go look that stuff up because it was high school. I mean, I am not, I can quote a little bit of Caesar and some other notables off the top of my head, but to spell it correctly
right.
Would be bad. So I do look that stuff up. Well, anyway, enough about that. So you did your work, and from your degree, you ended up doing absolutely nothing with your degree in that same field, right?
No, not really. I mean, I think, when anyone who studies anthropology, you're really either going to, if you really want to do work, you have to go get a PhD or a master's
right.
And teach at a college or something. And, but I knew I didn't want to do that. I just kind of used it more as a base. A lot of what I did was cultural anthropology and social anthropology that crossed over with sociology. It kind of is, but yeah.
Very much
related, So I ended up, and I always knew I wanted to work for nonprofit. So I ended up my first kind of, not real, but I had several jobs before, but I was, ever since I was about 19, I worked nonprofit, and I started out working as a youth counselor in an emergency shelter for homeless and foster kids. And at one time, we had a contract with the California Youth Authority, so we had some kids, who were sent in transition between juvie and wherever else they were going to go. So that's where I worked at first, and then I ended up with in disability rights.
And the name of the position you had is quite a mouthful. Do you want to tell it to all of us?
Yeah, my position was actually just advocate, but what I really was is I worked at a public interest law firm as a non-attorney legal advocate for youth with disabilities, and I specialized in mental health and special education law and advocacy. And actually, specifically, I was even more specialized in that. I handled all the high-end cases That was the grant that I worked under. And generally, by high-end, I mean kids who are deemed to have serious emotional behavior problems requiring a very high level of care, institutionalization, or at risk of or coming out of those types of environments. And my job was to kind of help advocate on their behalf to get services and get better care.
It was
a mouthful.
it was a mouthful, and I understand from talking to you before that it was pretty stressful.
Yeah, I really did love my job. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done this horrible commute that I had for several years. I worked there for 7 years or so, and my commute the first 2 years was actually, I didn't tell you this before, the first 2 years working there, and my office was in downtown LA, and I lived in South Orange County, and basically the commute was almost 3 hours each way the first 2 years. And then I moved closer, and then my commute was cut down to an hour and a half each way every day. So about 3 hours spent commuting. So, and, you know, public interest job, nonprofit, doesn't pay a lot, and the transportation issue was very taxing, but I loved it. That's why I did it. And I still love it to this day, but it was just draining. It was very draining and tiring. Because we never got any good calls.
Yes, and but you talked to me also about pressure that you felt that, you know, what it would be like if you dropped a ball, and that kind of resonated with me. You know, the idea that you have, there are some responsibilities that are hard. I mean, they're really hard, knowing that, you know, we're all human, and, you know, can you talk a little bit about that pressure?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, people who did the kind of work that I did and who still do that work, you know, they're in it because they believe in what they're doing. And you do it for the love, and we're not dealing with people. And what I felt was I always had to give 110%. And if I didn't, I would feel terrible, because it's not just, you know, I talked about filing deadlines. If you work for some banking firm or something and you miss a deadline, fine. You might get fined. Your customers are really mad at you. Your boss hates you for a month, a week, whatever. But, you know, that's not a big deal in the perspective of things, because if I miss if I don't only give 95% and not 110, and I miss a filing deadline for a kid on a complaint or a hearing, I'm kind of screwing with a kid's life. And that's a lot of responsibility to bear. And I just felt really, I would feel really guilty if I couldn't do that and I missed a deadline, because even a kid is only a kid for so long, and if you miss a deadline, it could be 3 months to a year to 2 years of their life that you could have been better, you could have helped them do something else. And I just, yeah, that was a huge kind of burden on my part that I felt very strongly about. And when I was getting a little burned out, I just didn't want to ever have that happen, so I took a little break.
Right, and you said you actually went to your boss and explained that, you know.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
You know, they thought I was doing okay, you know. Part of it was just, I mentioned earlier, I was a little burned out partly just because of the job. And then, I have parents, foster kids, social workers calling about 3 o'clock Fridays and saying, hey, you know, we have this kid that's going to juvie because the school or hospital or whatever didn't follow the plan that they were supposed to follow by law, and now this kid is at risk of going into juvenile detention. Can you come to a hearing on Monday? You know, stuff like that. And I just felt like I wasn't able to give 100% attention to that. And I had just also, at that point, when I was contemplating leaving, my mom had just died a year before, and I had spent about 2 or 3 years flying back and forth taking care of her. And so, you know, my bosses thought I was doing okay, but like I said, I just felt like I wasn't mentally there. I actually was obsessing about knitting the whole time, actually, and during any downtimes, because it was a stress relief. And so I do it on the train instead of working on the train, which I did sometimes, you know. So, yeah,
Yes, I know it's part of it. And so let's back up, because this is an interesting part of your life. you tried to knit twice, and the first time was, what we say, not a success. Would you tell our listeners that story, please?
Oh, yeah. The first time I tried was utter failure. I was in Houston taking care of my mom, and she lived in a very small townhouse and needed a lot of quiet. She was undergoing chemo and just really sick, and she had no TV, no internet. It was one of those free dial-up internet, so we can basically say there's no internet. And I couldn't, you know, and I had to pay attention, so I couldn't really, like, put on headphones and watch a movie the whole time in case she needed me. So I wanted to, I needed an outlet. So I went to, oh, and I couldn't bring my dad's sewing machine because that'd be too loud. So I went to the local youth bookstore, and I bought a book on how to knit. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool, you know. My grandma went to a special school in Japan. I think it was probably the Rosie Home School in Japan. But, you know, so I was like, oh, this would be, you know, a cool thing to learn. And so I followed this book, and it told me that if you're left-handed, you should hold a mirror up to the book and do it that way. And I actually write with my right hand right now, but I was born left-handed, so I do a lot of things left-handed. So this is, I thought, well, this is great because then I don't feel like I'm imbalanced and always using my right hand. So I did it, but then it was pretty quickly I realized that it wasn't going to work for me because then I'd have to reverse engineer everything. And at this time, I had even thought I invented SSK, but, you know, backwards too, because the book didn't tell you how to do an SSK, and I just really wanted to figure out a mirrored image for the knit two together. And so, yeah, so with, after about 2 weeks of that, I just said, yeah, this is not going to work, and I just quit. And then it wasn't until, that was probably late 2005, it wasn't until about mid 2006 when my sister, you know, I told her about this failed attempt at knitting, and she said, you know what, my friend just learned how to knit herself, and she bought this book called Stitch and Bitch, you know, so it's that Stitch and Bitch book by Debbie Stover. So I went out, bought it, and never looked back since. And that's when I was actually realized, oh, Eureka, this is how you can knit. I can do it continental. Yeah.
Well, you're actually not the first person to tell me that Debbie's book, Stitch and Bitch, was that thing that got them started. Great book.
Yeah, it got a lot of people started. It's a great book.
Yeah, yep. So, you know, kudos, Debbie.
Yes.
Yes. So you began knitting, and almost immediately your mind started turning on the possibilities. I know you're one of those people that your mind never shuts off, or you have to have process for that. And we'll talk about that later. But
yeah.
your mind started turning. I mean, all at once, you're knitting, and I'm sure about that time you were discovering the community of knitters and all kinds of things happening. You know, what was the evolution into you sort of becoming part of the industry? Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I started making up stuff right away, and I think part of it was just because I really needed that creative outlet, and part of it is just my inability to follow other people's instructions, probably, and I just start making stuff up. So, you know, and like I said, my job was stressful, so I was just, you know, subconsciously looking always for some sort of release, and so being creative and thinking of knitting was my little obsession. And I started, you know, I was like, you know what, I don't have anyone I know to share this with. No one didn't really have any friends who did that. And so I started a blog just to share with the world, you know, because blogging was kind of a sort of new thing at that time, or not new, but newish thing, especially to me. So I started one, and, you know, then I was, like, looking at some websites in my spare time, and I'm like, oh, you know, there's these knitting magazines out there, and so I started submitting for fun, and pretty soon after one or two attempts, I, you know, got letters saying, hey, we're accepting your design, and it just quickly went from that you know, hobby, dabble for fun thing into, you know what, I need to really take a break and maybe try something really creative, you know, so I can just say, hey, I tried it, I have no regrets. So that's kind of how it happened.
And that's, I mean, that's astounding. As you know, you've heard lots of stories. It doesn't always happen that quickly for other people. Not that it happened quickly for you, but, you know, it's you obviously have, you know, a gift at designing, and that was recognized right away. You've designed for, well, I think you're gifted. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I'll just go out on a limb and say that. So you've designed for publications and you've designed for yarn companies. And you and I had a really interesting conversation in our pre-interview about the differences between designing for a publication and designing for a yarn company. Would you mind talking to our listeners about that difference?
Yeah, I mean, for magazines and publications, it's definitely a slightly different process, though the end goal for both is just, you know, I want to try to find a middle ground for my aesthetics with the company or publisher's aesthetics and kind of show it in the best light. But the difference with designing for magazines is that you have a call for submission process, which means that they put out a call, put a mood board, and then so the designers, you know, we do sketches and swatches and we send it in. And you have to send it in based on, you know, I think most of designers, you kind of, you keep the publication or magazine's aesthetics in mind at the same time as the mood board and then also your own style and how to make that all meld in a nicer, cohesive way. And then so you send it in, but then there's no guarantee that they're going to select your design. So I could do 6, 7, 8, 10, however many sketches I feel like doing and send them in and they could take 0. And so that can be a little challenging in terms of waiting and just a lot of time is actually spent in the submission process. And with yarn companies, generally it's a lot easier and it's, you know, there's a lot more ways in which you can enter into an agreement. I feel like there's more flexibility. And I know in most cases, unless they're also doing a huge call, they're going to pick at least one of my designs. Or I can even approach them and say, hey, I have this idea. Can we work collaboratively? Or you can just do the yarn support bid. And or in the case of recently in fall 2003, Monos Uruguay hired me to do their fall collection. And, you know, I knew that whatever I submitted and the idea was a guarantee because they were going to pick some of it at least. So I think I did like 9 sketches and they picked the majority of it. And what I did was, again, my aesthetics and then keeping in mind the yarn company's yarns and try to highlight those. But I didn't have to go through a mood board. There was no call submission and then another 6 months of waiting to see whether they'd accept it or not. So I think those are the main differences.
Yes, I think I agree. Now, I gave in your resume a little bit about the publications that you have worked with, but I didn't really talk about some of the yarn companies that you've worked with. Would you mind giving us, you know, some of the yarn companies that you've worked with?
I've worked with Bijou Basin Ranch. I mentioned Monos de Uruguay. I've done stuff in collaboration with Azula Yarn, and I've collaborated early on also with Southwest Training Company on a few designs, and just different companies doing different things.
Okay.
Wendy Valley Muskox, I did something for them too.
Yeah, you know, the problem with Wendy Valley stuff is it's just, you know, it's no fun to work with at all, right?
Yeah, it's not even soft. The muskox is scratchy.
Yeah. Oh, and again,
no
folks,
one wants to touch it.
I am totally kidding. If you haven't worked with some of that, and there's other fibers out there too, but you know, it's fun to work with that stuff.
Oh yeah, it's so soft and warm.
Yeah, absolutely. And okay, well, we'll move on. I want to talk about the crafty diversions. And when you first When I first became aware of you and when we first met, Crafty Diversions was a reality, and I thought it was a great idea. Can you talk about how Crafty Diversions, well, first of all, in your own words, what is it and how did it come about?
Crafty Diversions right now, as it stands, is a small, what I call a boutique distributor. And it came about originally as my crafting blog when I started to knit, and then when I decided to try the whole knitting industry as more seriously, I turned it into my brand, my design brand, and I designed as Crafty Diversions. And usually, if people have seen me before, I branded as Crafty Diversions by Ann Quigley Keto, because, you know, when my name shows up in magazines, they're not going to put Crafty Diversions on it. They have my name. So I branded it as that. But then, and I also had a distributor who would sell my patterns to yarn shops who would then sell it to the consumers and retail and knitters. But then, you know, last year I started thinking, you know, I wanted to grow a little bit more and go more off my own, mainly because I wanted to have more flexibility on what I could do and be in a position where I could have more of a relationship with shops, you know, and keep more abreast of the industry changes and trends, like right at the forefront. So I decided I was just going to distribute myself for a while. But then it just worked out that a few other designers were looking for a change too. And then, you know, the kind of wheels, you know, the many nights of insomnia, the wheels turned, and I said, you know what, I should just do a small distributor, you know, same channels, just more administrative work for me, actually a lot more, but at the same time, I thought it was a good move, so I rebranded Crafty Diversions as a distributor, and I rebranded my own design line under my own name. So now my design line under my own name, Ann Quigley Keto, resides under the distributor umbrella of Crafty Diversions, just like all the other designers that Crafty Diversion represents under its umbrella. So that's
how it evolved. Right, and it's taken off. Now, again, you talked about your own brand and your own website, which is AnnQuigleyKeto.com, and I want to parenthetically say something about your name. Folks, last week when I was on the show with Myra Wood, I knew that at the end of my show I was going to have to be talking about Anne's upcoming show. And I've known Anne for a while, and I actually know how to pronounce Anne. It's not Annie, it's Anne, and I know how to pronounce Lukito. However, K-U-O was a bit of a mystery to me, and I was mortified, and not mortified, I was terrified that I mispronounce it. So I actually emailed Anne and said, okay, I gotta copy this. I don't know how to say this. I'm going to say it wrong. Can you please give me a pronunciation guide? She was so sweet. She sent it to me phonetically, but also on the spot did a video of how to pronounce it, put it up on YouTube, and sent me the YouTube link, which I think is incredibly responsive, and I think you need to get credit for that.
Oh, thanks. I just thought it was kind of a fun thing to do, and I know you have a good sense of humor. You would find it kind of entertaining. So, yeah, folks, if you want to see it, it's on YouTube. Just me being a little silly. And I do get asked a lot, and I don't take offense at all. And, you know, I've never heard you mispronounce my name, or at least not that I've noticed before. I mean, you know, at the Stitches banquets and events where you've announced my name, I don't think you've butchered it before.
Well, there's a secret to that, Anne. What you do is you pronounce Anne with a lot of authority, and then you mumble, and then say, Lukito. And if you hit those two really like you know what you're doing, they assume that you hit the middle one right. And I'm famous for things like that, you know. And all you hear is that confidence in the voice on the first and the last part of it. And so it's – but now I actually know. If I mispronounce it, you know, really shame on me. But anyway, let's get beyond that. I want to talk about the creation of your own company and the branding of your own company, relatively new. You have a new logo. You're working on a new website. And I really like the sensibility. I wanted to tell you about that. There are nice, clean lines. I think you just have a good look about the whole thing.
Oh, thank you.
Is that your design?
That's what I'm aiming for. I'm sorry?
Is what you see in your presentation, is that your own design sense?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to achieve. I kind of want that more clean, modern look and just be a little bold at the same time. So clean and simple.
Clean and simple. No, I like that. And, it's working. I mean, your designs follow that through as well. And I know that there's you're looking for something that's classical. You're looking for something that's interesting. And it works. It really works.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about the actual business, because this is something that, you and I had some fun talking about during the pre-interview, and that's the actual business, being in the pattern creation or editing and all that stuff. It's hard. Folks, you have no idea how hard it actually is, from the photography to the getting the text to the editing of the patterns to the tech editing to the layout to, and then it all comes out, it is such a lot of work. And, I know that you do a lot of that on your own. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. The process is rather intensive, and from beginning to end, and I do actually do all of it myself, except for tech editing. I sent that out to somebody because I don't care what some people say. And there are some people who think they can tech edit themselves, but honestly, there's no way you can edit your own work and see it with a subjective eye. Objective eye at all, because you just can't. Everything from the concept to the design to the swatches to the grading, you should see my Excel spreadsheets. I never thought I had to do so much math, ever. And then doing the photography and the layouts and ads and blogs and websites and, posting in different venues, from Craftsy, Ravelry, your own website, whatever other sites, and then preparing it for printing as well. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. I actually don't
knit
that much. People think I knit all the time. I don't.
Well, and you and I talked about that, too. We talked about, people out in the world, when you're in an event, they see you knitting. Well, at an event, you can't sit in front of your computer and work on documents. That's the time you can.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, like some friends, if we're going out and I'm at like a open mic night or at a bar, I will be knitting, because most knitters try to make the most of their time, and that's what I'm doing. But what I'm knitting is actually work, and so they're like, "Why are you always knitting?" I'm like, "Actually, no, I'm only knitting because I'm out. Otherwise, I'm on the computer doing something 80-90% of the time." And yeah, it's a misnomer that we knit all the time. There are times when I'm spending hours and hours knitting for a deadline, but that's it.
Right, and I'm sure you're probably to the point now where you only have time to knit your own stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately. There are so many good designs out there that I would love to knit for myself, and even my own designs I want to, wear or knit for myself or adapt more to fit my body, but I just don't have the time. As it is, sometimes I hire sample knitters to knit for me, so I don't have the time to leisurely knit. And very few people in my life get hand-knit gifts. They're very, very special if they get a hand-knit gift, because, again, I don't have the time. They have to be very knit-worthy.
Very knit-worthy. Well, I like that. No, I do understand that. Fortunately for you, the person you're knitting for is a great designer. So, you're knitting good stuff.
Thanks. But I can't wear most of my stuff, actually, because I'm saving it for shows and different things. And usually I don't want to mess up my garments.
No, I do understand that. I do understand. Earlier in on your first show, we talked about the photography thing. People have this idea that a photo shoot is an incredibly glamorous place. And folks,
no.
It's an incredibly hard place. And there's so many variables. And it's about getting everything right, and then it's about it's about large numbers. How many pictures so that you can get something that's usable? You want to talk about photography?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to take, 100, 200 pictures before you can get a small handful of good ones. And even then, you might need to do a lot of editing. Like, the telephone pole you didn't think to look for that's now sticking out of the model's head. It's a little distracting from the knitwear that you're trying to focus on. But, yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean, you've experienced this a lot with all the XRX books and Knitters magazines and other stuff, I know. But it's, you know, like the times where you're wearing a sweater in 80, 90-degree weather or wearing a tank top in midwinter just to get it out for the next season. And I sometimes model myself, and there's several reasons for that. One is I do a lot of things last minute and need a model, like, right away, and there's no one available. So I will model myself and maybe with a friend taking photos, or in desperate times, I actually go to, like, a park, buy my full, you know, makeup and with a tripod and try to take the photograph myself. And I can't wear contacts, so I am blind as a bat. So I take off my glasses, you know, to do the photograph so there's no glare. And then I'm, like, squinting at the camera trying to see if it looks good. And I get all these weird looks from people at the park thinking, who is this crazy lady, you know, taking photos of herself on a tripod in summer in a giant sweater and squinting all the time, running back and forth between the camera. So there's that. The other reason that I model myself is just because, we're such a knit community, and my name is my brand, so I intentionally model some of the things as well for that reason. And it's cheaper.
No, I do understand about that. But you along the way, you've learned the skills, and you figured out what it takes to do all this stuff, and you put out your own patterns. And so the next evolution for you became, you know, something bigger than a single pattern or a couple of patterns. It became a book. And I'd like to talk about your book. I'd like you to tell us the name of your book.
The name of my book is called Liberation, and it's a collection of knitted hats or headwear inspired by notable women. It's a 52-page book that's printed. Originally, actually, when I first kind of was newer to the knitting world, I came up with this idea of a collection that I published only as an ebook. It was a collection of 6 hats. But, you know, I was never absolutely happy with it because at that time I didn't have some of the skills that I have now, and I really wanted to really highlight this collection in the way that I originally intended. So I redid a lot of samples, redid the photos, and decided to do and added 2 new patterns and decided to print it as a print book. So it's all official printed book with ISBN. It's available actually for pre-orders now, and I'll have it at Stitches West at my booth.
And actually, folks, that just happened today that I think that I understand that the pre-orders of the physical book are available. This is an interesting, and we'll have links to that on our Ravelry group as well. So this book is not only a beautiful design collection, but you spoke earlier about how they're inspired by, you know, remarkable women. Would you like to give us a few of the remarkable women?
Yeah, mainly I concentrated on women who lived between 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, and all women of influence, because I just wanted to celebrate women in history. And, of course, I have to celebrate knitters in that as well, and one of them is Eleanor Roosevelt. And, of course, the knitters I can't not celebrate is Elizabeth Zimmerman and Barbara Walker. And the book also has little, you know, so each pattern is pays homage to them, is named after these women. And I put a little small paragraph about what they're known for and some of their accomplishments in the book.
Well, that's fantastic. And again, for our listeners, where can they get the ebook if they're looking for the ebook?
The ebook, it will be on Ravelry. It will be on my website at annquolucito.com. Those are the 2 main places I'll have, and I'll probably list it on Craftsy as well.
Well, I've taken a look at it, and I think it's great. On the show, folks, on the live show, we did give away a copy of this book, the e-book edition, to a live caller, and a longtime listener, Audrey, won that, and we want to congratulate Audrey again. And we wanted to let you know that there is another ebook that is available to be won. In order to get in on that, you need to go up to the Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. Tammy has started a thread and post in there. And I think probably usually Sunday night she pulls a name and then announces the winner on that Monday program. So you have a little bit more time to win a copy of Anne's book. And, of course, you're coming to Stitches West. You can see the printed book for the first time, right?
Yes, I'll be doing fingers crossed it will get here when it's posted, which is next Monday. But I'll bring them to Stitches West and do book signings, and people can purchase it from my booth before ever anyone else, actually, because it'll be the first time that they're out of the shipment.
Very exciting. That's very exciting. I'm going to have to come by and get one and have you sign one for me.
Oh, of course. I will sign one for you.
Well, you segued into Stitches, so let's talk a little bit about that. You are a great teacher. You got on our radar, and of course, we asked you to come and teach for us. And that's kind of how you got involved with this, motley crew from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Your classes are wildly popular. You've got four classes at the upcoming Stitches West show, and I believe that all but one of them are sold out. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I heard. They're all sold out except for one, which is the Thursday night one. It's called The Right Fit, and there is some space in there.
The Thursday afternoon one?
Yes, the Thursday afternoon. All the other ones were sold out, I think, a long time ago.
Yeah, they are.
Which is good for me.
Well, we still have a little over a week. Who knows if you could run the table on this? It wouldn't surprise me. You're very engaging, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. For people that are coming that may be thinking about that, you want to tell them a little bit about that class that still has some openings?
Yeah, sure. The Right Fit. It's a class that talks about fit. Go figure. We talk about different body types and different features that we want to highlight and how to dress for those features and, creating those lines, the silhouettes that we desire to have. And from that, I go into the knitting bit of it because it's important to me. I mean, I don't think most people don't have, like, the quote-unquote perfect body. And, we always have something that is not standard or something we desire to highlight or minimize. And with knitting, we spend so much time knitting and hand knitting. I want people to have a good, positive experience because it makes me really sad when somebody says, oh, I just spent, several hundred dollars on this awesome yarn, but it just doesn't work my project. Or this sweater looks really great in the pictures and on everyone else, but it looks crappy on me. So, the whole point of the class is to talk about different modifications that people can make, yarn selections, talk about things to avoid for, your body type, and what are the little tricks that you can do to change some of the lines of that garment to make it work for you. So that's basically the gist of the class, and, it's fun.
Well, again, you're a really engaging teacher, and I've read your reviews, and I know that there's that part in you that is really interested in the how can you help, how can you get that knitter to that next step.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably true for a lot of teachers, or it's just you want to. The reason I like teaching is because I really enjoy that eureka moment from students, and I also learn from them too. Each time I teach, I learn something different. And I really like that sharing of ideas, and I want them to at least learn, several things from my class. And yeah, I try going in also thinking about, different, and this probably comes from my background too, working with disability rights and special education, is that everyone has different learning styles, and people take in information differently. And, sometimes it's a bad day, sometimes it's a bad month, or sometimes it's just you might be more visual than someone else who is more spatial. So I try to remember that when I'm teaching and try to say things and present things in different ways. So yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like there's always more to learn. You know, when I think I've approached it all the ways I can think of, there's that one student who just doesn't understand sometimes my approach. So then I kind of figure out how to approach them and get it and deliver my information in a way that benefits them.
Well, you know, from our standpoint, you have always been a pleasure to work with at the shows. So I do appreciate it.
Thanks. You guys do, I mean, I have to say, and I'm not just saying that, you guys do a really, really, I mean, y'all do a really good job at the shows, and I can't imagine, you told me how little staff you had, and I can't believe y'all pull off shows as big as Stitches West with, like, so smoothly. It's amazing to me.
Well, you know, people always have a misperception because, you know, again, Stitches West is, you know, it's kind of a big show, and you've been to other shows that we've had that it's huge, yeah. And, you know, people sometimes forget that, you know, ours is a small family company, you know, really very much a small family company. I mean, mm-hmm. we're not, you know, we're not a big corporation. I'm second generation running it, and, you know, it's still sitting in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and, you know, we came from a yarn store. I mean, it was kind of an evolution. But anyway, I don't want to get into my history. We've done that on other podcasts before. So let's talk about your other thing that you're doing. You mentioned it before, but I think it's worth talking about because we want to make sure that Fiber Hooligan listeners that are going to West know about this. You're doing something new at Stitches this year. And so let's talk about that.
Yeah, I'm bending for the first time ever. It'll be quite a juggle. I'm going to be actually in Anzula land with the Anzula Yarn Ladies. And for the listeners who don't know, they make fabulous yarn. And so they were kind enough to get me a booth by them, and I will be at booth 46. And when I'm teaching, I will have some good friends helping me run the booth. But when I'm not teaching, that's where I'll be, and people can come and, you know, look at samples in person, because we all know that it's so different looking at them in person than online or in a photo. And I'll be selling patterns and kits and, of course, my books and a few other things that I'll be bringing.
So, yeah, right, absolutely. So we talked about it before, and I have to tease her again because, you know, I don't know, Sabrina and the gang, I mean, don't you think you could have hooked up with somebody that was, you know, had some more life and fun in them?
Yeah, they're so boring. They never make me laugh, and they're always so mean to me all the time. And Sabrina never offers to give me a little massage on my shoulders.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough crowd. And folks, I am being totally sarcastic here. If you haven't met Sabrina and the Anzula gang, some of the best people. They're fun. They're energetic. The yarns are vibrant. It's, you know, you owe it to yourself to try to get over there and meet those folks.
Yeah. Very special yarns and special people, Ashley.
Very special people. Yeah, I agree. Very special people. So let's move on from that. And by the way, congratulations and welcome into the vendor family. We appreciate you taking that step with us. And, you know,
Thank
we'll
you.
Try to treat you right on that side of it, too. let's talk about your creative process, because everybody has a unique creative process. Yours reminds me a bit of my own processes, and I'm not nearly creative at all, but I do have my own little weird things that I do. You talk about things that really resonate with me. You talk about not being able to put your brain to sleep. You talk about insomnia. You talk about, you know, all that kind of stuff. If you don't mind, can we talk a bit about that and how you schedule and cope with all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have the benefit of I work for myself, so I can schedule things however I'd like to schedule them. You know, the insomnia bit used to be a problem for me especially when, you know, I worked for somebody else and, you know, I had to get up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning to catch a train to work to LA and then I went to bed at 2:30 or 3. That can be a problem, but now it's not, I embrace it. You know, we talked about the insomnia bit. It's, you know, if you fight it, it actually is worse. So now I just embrace it. If my brain doesn't want to shut down and it wants to stay up, I let myself stay up and just work through it. And then I'll sleep a little later and just, you know, work later. So I end up, you know, sometimes maybe going to bed at 3 and getting up at 9, but then I'll work to, you know, very late as well to make up for that. But, you know, it's there are times when my body is just super tired, and I recognize that, and my brain just does not want to shut off. It's either thinking about this thing that I have to do, or, you know, some other idea, or whatever else, or, oh my God, that photo shoot, I need to, you know, do this and that tomorrow for it. So I unwind. You talk about your zombie apocalypse books. I kind of do similar. I watch stupid Netflix shows, or I'll read, you know, a very long scientific article or something just to help my mind focus on one thing and just slow down and then fall asleep, you know, or watch some, you know, I guess some reruns of some stupid shows. Mindless things.
What? And that's the key. We were talking about that before. It can't be anything great or engaging, because then it won't work, because then your mind will just wander and you'll get irritated with yourself. And for me, I've done it before. I have a penchant for, zombie apocalypse novels. And I sometimes say bad zombie apocalypse novels, and people laugh at me and say, are there good ones? Yes, folks, there really are good ones. And there are some really great versions that I don't read when I'm in that mood because they're too good. And don't laugh, because it's a genre that's underappreciated as far as I'm concerned. But we talk about, okay, yeah, people are going to laugh at me. Even you're laughing. It's fine. I'm okay with that.
It's okay.
I can't laugh too much
because I haven't read a zombie apocalypse book yet, but, you know, you never know. I've read some vampire books.
Yeah, I kind of grew out of vampire books, but that's a whole other part of my life that we're not going to talk about. But, yeah, I do know what you're talking about the tricks that we try to learn to cope with the idea that, you know, you're tired enough that you have to figure out a way to turn it off. And
yeah,
I think, like you, I don't like taking pills.
No, I've taken enough in my life when I've had to, and I just, if I can avoid it, I'm going to avoid it, you know. And, my dad has had to take some pills for his insomnia, but I don't want to get there, because then it becomes a struggle. I'm like, ah, these pills don't work, and, you know, I'm just embracing it. And, you know, I can be very excited mentally and overworked for a week, and then, you know, the next week I let myself crash and rest a little bit more. So.
Well, I think that's probably the way to do it, and it's good that you found that rhythm, and it's good that you found the mechanisms. I could definitely, you know, use your example and work on my own methods for dealing a little better. There are times where I don't think I do a very good job dealing, but we won't get into that either.
Yeah, I don't either, but it's not perfect, and, you know, I think it's for everybody. You just kind of try to find the best system that works for you. It didn't work for me for a long time until I'm like, oh, I just, you know, won't beat myself up about watching stupid TV, you know, or, you know, something I would never watch on my own with 100% sound mind for entertainment. I just would never do it, but, you know, I used to kind of feel guilty about that, and so I just embrace this stupid stuff. Because it's relaxing, it's stress release, you know.
I think that's completely inappropriate. Now, we're coming down pretty close to the end of the interview here, and but there's one sort of anecdotal story that you've got to tell from Sock Summit that I know of. You have to tell our listeners, because it's a great story, and you know, I understand that I'm probably, you know, now I've hyped it, you know, if people don't find it great, it's all my fault, but people will find it great. Can you tell your Sock Summit story?
Yeah. Well, most people who don't know me don't realize or may not know that I'm actually a very shy introvert by nature, and I don't like talking to people I don't know very much. And it's a little different when I go to a show, because I am – you know, I treat everyone like my friend, and I go into that mental state. But, you know, in normal life, I find it very intimidating to approach people I don't know, especially, let's say, somebody, you know, known. And so at Sock Summit, you know, I was going to go look for yarns, and that was the time I had the idea for my book, Liberation. And I had some sketches, and a friend of mine that I went with, Denise Wilkinson, said, you know, and since you're naming it after notable women, Barbara Walker's here. Why don't you go ask her? And I was like, oh, no, I can't do that. You know, I mean, it's Barbara Walker. You know, I'm a nobody. I was just starting out in the knitting world. And no. But she kept egging me on. And so finally, you know, after, I don't know, whole hour of me shaking, like, you know, because she was the keynote and the panelist, so I listened to her panel, and I was, like, shaking, and I finally, my friend totally pushed me there, and so I was like, okay, I'll do it. So I went up to her, I was about to pee in my pants, and my face was red, and I was sweating like a pig, and it was not even hot there. Face matched the red hat that I was wearing. I just, you know, said, Miss Walker, you know, can I talk to you for a second? I have this idea, you know, about these collection. I wanted to name it after important women, and would it be okay if I named one of the hats after you? And she was so gracious, and she just looked at me, and at first I thought she was going to say no, and I was about to cry, but I was like, she was just very sweet, and she said, of course. And I don't know how I mustered up the courage, and I had the idea. And I'm like, well, would you like to pick one of these designs that I stitched out? Is there one that, you know, you might have worn when you were a little younger? And she said, yeah. So she picked out the hat that is now called Barbara Walker in the Liberation book. And, you know, when she said yes and picked it out, I almost peed in my pants again. And then about a year later, I was at the National Needle Arts Association show, which is a trade show for knitters, for those of you who don't know. And she was there, so I actually had the hat too. So I went up to Barbara Walker again. This time a little less nervous, but I was still pretty shaky. And I said, hey, Miss Walker, you know, I don't know if you remember me, but last year at Sox Summit, I asked you about naming one of my hats after you, and here's the hat. And I showed her, and she was like, oh, I'm so tickled. I love it. I'm so honored. No one has ever named a hat after me or any patterns after me. And I just kind of looked at her, you know, in my head. I was like, are you crazy? I mean, the honor is totally mine. You know, you allowed me to honor you with this. It wasn't about, you know, she was just such a magnanimous woman. And I can't even, I know I'm rambling, but I just, it was a really great experience, and I just can't believe what a gracious person she was. So, yeah, that was a little story from Sox Summit. And actually, after I asked Barbara Walker, I was, you know, still scared. But my friend then said, why don't you go ask Meg Swanson if you can name a hat after Elizabeth Zimmerman? So I did that, too. So there is an Elizabeth Zimmerman and a Barbara Walker in a hat, and I got in the book, and I got permission to name it after them.
I mean, that's amazing. It floors me too that not another designer has named a pattern honoring Barbara Walker before. So you have that honor of being the first. And
yeah,
what
I mean,
a great story.
I don't know if someone did and she just didn't know. I don't know. I kind of keep blinders on sometimes. I don't look to see what people have done. I mean, with, you know, but but I can't believe that more people haven't done that. So,
well, you're right. Maybe they haven't done it. We just don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if they did or didn't. But she didn't know at the time, and she says no one ever had. So, and it's quite an honor to have met her, you know, and talked to her, and even, you know, I have even more respect for her now because of her just humility and just how nice and wonderful she is. You know, on top, you know, she done so many other things besides knitting, and that's what she really seems to want people to remember her for too, not just the knitting aspect.
Right. Well, but what a great story, and thank you for sharing that. You know, it's I always get tickled. I've heard this a couple times from you, and I always get tickled having you tell it. So that's wonderful. So is there? We got a couple of last questions here. Is there anything new that you're working on that you can talk about to our Fiber Hooligan audience?
I mean, I'm always working on different collections, but right now I have a book that I'm working on. It was an idea that I've had for at least 4 years, but I've been working on and off. You know, I had to delay it a little bit due to health reasons, but I'm back working on it and hoping to have the book done by the end of the year. The book is it's inspired by fairy tales, and, you know, not in a kind of cartoony kind of way, because I don't expect people to wear a knitted ball gown. It's my take on what I think modern fairy tale characters might wear today. what would Cinderella wear today? Realistically, out in the open, if she was, say, like a young professional or, you know, on a weekend or something like that. So that's the concept of the book. I don't have a title yet, but definitely want to get it finished sooner than later. It's already been sitting in my head, keeping me up at night for almost 4 years now.
Well, maybe you call it fairy tale makeovers. I don't know. No, it sounds like a fun book, and I can't wait to see it. So when do you think that might come out?
I'm hoping to have it out by the end of 2014. Fingers crossed.
Okay.
Working hard on that.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to seeing it. Maybe we'll have you back on the show so you can talk about that then.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Thanks, yeah.
Hopefully we won't have to do it several times. But, okay, back to final two questions, second to last questions. Are there any shout-outs that you'd like to make to anyone?
Yeah, my friend Denise Wilkinson. She's the one that shoved me into talking to Barbara Walker. And she's also helped me a lot at just on different things and being a really good supporter and encouraging friend. And she's actually is going to be at Stitches West as well. I'm giving her part of my booth space to and encouraging her to become a business person as well. And so she's going to sell some of her lamp work stitch markers that she makes from scratch from beginning to end, and also some of her amazing bags. So Denise Wilkinson.
All right. Well, you know, Denise, we'll look forward to seeing you at Stitches West as well. Okay, so this is that final question that I always warn our guests about. Before we wrap this up, I'd like to ask you if you have a final message you'd like to share with our listeners.
Yeah, you know, what I like to tell knitters is just enjoy your knitting. You know, don't stress about it. It's not life-shattering. It sucks, but, you know, if you drop, like, you know, a row or a lot of stitches, but it's not earth-shattering. It's not, like, some expensive thing that you broke, and just go with the flow and enjoy it. And learn from it.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a nice piece of advice. And so I want to thank you again for joining us today. And you're such a good sport. This re-interview was as good as the first one. I'm sorry you had to do it. Glad that we got it done so that the Barbara Hooligan listeners will get to hear from you.
No, and thank you for having me. It's, you know, it's still fun, and it's always fun talking to you, and thanks for having me on the show.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you in a little over a week at Stitches West.
Yes. Oh, my God. I can't believe it's coming up so fast.
All right. You have a great evening.
Thank you very much, Benjamin, and thank you very much to all the listeners.
Great. Ann Kuo Lukito. You can keep up with what Ann is doing by visiting her website, annkuolukito.com. I'm going to spell that for you, ANNEKUOLUKITO.com. And that's one you're going to want to bookmark. So because we had to re-record this, there is not going to be a segment by our wonderful segment host, Tammy Burke, who hosts the State of the Union, State of the Hooligan segment. Tammy had a great guest this week planned. She was actually going to have her very own first interview on her segment, and because of technology, we just couldn't have that. So we're going to try to bring her guest back at the end of next week's show. Again, for all of the technical issues that we had, both the live listeners and for Anne, I want to apologize. We'll try to figure out how we can not have those happen again. But speaking of next week, my guests next week will be Barbara Pushes and Mary Dean Nelson, the creators and owners of the Yarnover Truck. The story behind this is great. They met in 2010 at a Tuesday night knitting group and became fast friends. One night at group, Mary Dean mentioned that she was thinking about opening a yarn store. She had a name and a location all picked out, but the financial realities of a brick-and-mortar yarn store seemed overwhelming. During her weekly knitting class at work, Barbara brought up her friend's yarn store idea. It was always a dream of Barbara's, too, but like Meredy, it always just seemed out of reach for financial reasons. One of the members of the knitting group suggested a yarn truck, and immediately Barbara was enamored with the idea. Hours of Google research on mobile retail businesses and one overwhelmingly long email to Merity later, they found themselves on Melrose talking with one of LA's first mobile boutiques. On July 5th, 2012, the Yarnover Truck was born. For those of you who haven't heard about this, the Yarnover Truck is a local yarn store on wheels, imitating the incredibly lucrative food truck business model and applying it to the mobile yarn store. The truck makes appearances at a variety of local events, including street fairs, crafts fairs, art and music festivals, and farmers markets throughout Southern California. Additionally, the Yarnover Truck hosts its own events and is available for private parties. Their goal is to not only sell yarn, but to increase awareness and provide needle arts education with a focus on knitting and crochet. This year, the Yarnover Truck team, as well as the Yarn Truck itself, will be on the Stitches West Market floor. We've never done that before, but thought it might be worth a try. These ladies have a lot planned for the weekend, and I'm looking forward to having them on the show next week so they can tell us what they've been up to, what we can expect at Stitches, and in the future. I hope you'll join us for this show. It should be a lot of fun. I also want to make sure that you know that I am eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here this evening, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligan.